I've asked a couple of guys in the congregation, two men in the business world, who have at different times shared with me some decisions they were making in the area of finances and in tithing as God grew them up. And so I know some of the decisions that have gone on for them financially and in the area of giving because they've let me know about it. What you find out in the scriptures is that Christianity is a personal thing, but it's not a private thing. It's God intends for Christianity, for our walk with God, to be lived out in the context of a Christian body of believers or a community of believers that we share life with. And so I know some of the things that have gone on in their personal growth in this area. And so I asked them just to share with you and to do this interview so that you could hear how God's worked in and through their lives. We'll start with Mark just for the first question, which is quick. Mark, when was it that both these guys have come to Christ in the past several years through the ministry of the congregation? Mark, when was it that you committed your life to Christ?
I committed my life, I think it was March of 1994.
Okay, 94, and then Greg?
Much newer, about 4 years ago.
Okay, all right. And what was your attitude toward giving before you committed your life to Christ?
Well, I know before I committed my life, I was more of I wasn't much of a giver. And as I thought about it and we started to come to CIV, I was thinking, you know, I don't make that much. And I think God would prefer that I pay off my debts than anything else. So that's kind of how I thought about it.
Greg?
I guess my attitude was that I had already considered myself a giver before I was a Christian, at least what I defined as a giver at that point in my life. Knew of tithing, knew of giving the first fruit to God, 10%, and basically my attitude was, well, I can't afford that. But that just simply, that's too much money, that cannot be afforded.
Yeah. And what are some of the things God has used to change your attitude toward giving, or how has He done that?
Well, I know for me over time, there's been a lot of just studying the Word. There's been some seminars that I've gone to. There's been some messages that I've heard. But actually, the thing that really spoke to me was a circumstance. I got to a point in our life with our finances that there was just nowhere else to go. And I had to turn to God because I just couldn't do anything else. And I was so far behind. I just said, okay, God, I'm giving it to you. And after I did that, things started to turn around.
My answer would be very, very similar. God definitely used our financial circumstances to say, you're being wasteful. This is an area that truly He's blessed us in. And before we could focus on tithing, we'd had to focus overall on our stewardship of our blessings, of our finances. And so stewardship really became the first issue for us. And tithing, while extremely important, was kind of a subset of that for us to get a grip on our overall financial circumstances. And to just steward our overall blessings in a much more appropriate and certainly scripturally correct way, and from that really is when the desire and the need to grow our tithing came from. In addition, He also put circumstances around us in terms of people who are living an example. You know, much like Mark said, people that were that. We're probably not making as much money, living in a much more disciplined way, and certainly tithing. And those people were put in our lives for reasons, and were certainly made known to us in their example for reasons that I understand now.
Mm-hmm. Greg, hold on to that. And how has God used this whole area, you know, just the challenge to give, getting over the hump to get to the point where you could trust Him to do that? How has He used that to develop your character?
Yeah, I think probably the biggest character issue for me is that it humbled me. I had an inappropriate amount of pride, a lot of ego tied up in what I was making. And when I quit worrying about what I was making and really started being very grateful for it, there was just a fundamental shift to having a real gratitude for what He had provided for Vicki and I and our family. in terms of financial blessings, from that gratitude flowed, a lot more, I think, humility and humbleness and gratefulness for the circumstances that he put us in to teach us a lesson and to move us forward.
And how about you, Mark? if there is asked. Anyway.
Well, actually, Greg said a lot when he talked about stewardship, and I think that's really where we began to grow and God began to strengthen us as we learned more about turning it all over to Him. It belongs to Him anyway. And as we learned to be better stewards of what we had, that was one of the areas in finances. Is like, I think it's in Luke where he talks about, why give somebody more if they can't handle what they already have. And so we began to just think about just being better stewards of what God had given us. And as he went along, he kept strengthening us, and we'd take little steps, baby steps, and we see results coming back, and it's amazing what God will do.
Then Mark, how and Greg eventually, how has God used this whole area? It's easy to separate finances and spiritual things, but how has God used the area of finances, and in particular growing into the tithe? How has He used that to build your faith?
Well, one of the things he says is seek first his kingdom and all his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you. And we have found that as we have just set out to follow his principles and give what belongs back to him, he has just opened up the floodgates. I mean, nothing like we're rich and we won the lottery, but we have enough to get everything it is we need. We have a couple of instances where we had enough to buy a used car, and that was just God's provision that he provided that for us. And just recently, I was kind of wondering why I had a couple extra hundred in the checking account until I took the car in to have the tires rotated and found out the tires were worn really bad. And I said, well, God provided. He has ways of providing for us. And we just, every day, I mean, we've got a long ways to go, but every day as we reach out and we just trust Him to provide for us, He does. It's amazing.
I think for me, the issue that really grew in my faith here is that, in relation to finances, is that I'm kind of a black and white guy, and faith is a heart issue. It's not a brain issue. And it was hard for me to get my hands around this notion of stepping out on faith in my finances. We have responsibilities to people in our family that I was concerned that I would be able to continue to meet in doing these things a few years back. And several years ago in a message, Randy talked about Gideon in Judges 6, 36 through 40. Gideon essentially asked God to confirm his call to save Israel, where Gideon put out a fleece the first night and said, if this is what you want me to do, then make the ground dry and make the fleece wet, and then I'll know that this is what you want me to do. And next morning, sure enough, the ground's dry and the fleece is wet. And Gideon, like Greg would do, said, okay, how about just one more sign? That was pretty good, but how about now you make the fleece dry and the ground wet? And sure enough, next morning, guess what happened? So I did put out a fleece. I decided a few years back that, and we had gone through a course that Randy had made available to us on scriptural money management, and put all these pieces together and said, okay, we're going to start out tithing 5% and saving 5%, and I'm just going to do it, and we're going to take it from there. And that was my fleece I hung out, if you will, and God has been extremely faithful to reward that in ways that are way beyond honestly what I could share in here. That was absolute profound evidence of God's grace, and also for us, what we clearly believe is we're clearly called to serve in this area. He's blessed us mightily, and we feel very called to serve in this area when needs arise. And as Mark said, it's amazing that the money is there when there's been needs for friends and family, and we just feel very blessed and very grateful for the experience. And I think, just if I can, just one other quick area. sometimes I think the easiest thing to do is to write a check versus giving of yourself. And one of the things that, in terms of the humbling aspect of this, is certainly being around CIV, is you see the people that give of themselves. The last couple of days, I had just another vivid reminder of that. We had a church wedding, Tracy and Tim's wedding. The Lewises are a much-loved family in our church, and the volunteer spirit, the heart that was given the last couple of days, it was really inspiring, motivating to be around and to see the people, the number of people who were giving of themselves, of their backs, and of their hearts. And I mean, God's clearly used that the issue of finances to keep me humble and realize what's really important. Because again, I think sometimes it's a lot easier to write a check than to give of yourself.
Thank you, guys. One of those topics that unless God has grown you to the point where you've worked through some of the kinds of things that Mark and Greg have worked through, and as they've seen God get completely involved in the process and in their lives and bless them through their giving, it's one of those topics that you'd rather not bring up in a message like this, I know. But it's really a crucial aspect of our walk with the Lord. When you commit to membership here at CIV, you commit to some hard attitudes. And the first four of those hard attitudes deal with boundaries and guidelines for interpersonal relationships that really allow your relationships to flourish instead of wilt. If you find yourself violating these hard attitudes, then your relationships tend to shrivel and wilt over time. But if you'll stay in the boundaries of these guidelines, they have an opportunity to flourish and be mutually beneficial to the people involved in those relationships. The first four are like that. The last three hard attitudes are boundaries and things that we commit to in our relationship to the congregation. And in much the same way, these commitments foster growth in the congregation and in you as you faithfully fulfill your commitment to those hard attitudes. This message particularly relates to hard attitude number six, which is support the work financially. And I want us to see this morning why it's so important to commit to that. Why does God make such a big deal out of money in the Scriptures? And why does He want us to let go of a proportion of that money to support His work? Because Psalm 50 says, God says in Psalm 50, I have no need of the bulls from your stalls. I don't need your offerings. I don't need your tithes. See, God's in control. He owns the universe. And so He doesn't really need our offerings. He could come up with another plan. But why did He decide to do His work through the offerings of His people? Why did He decide to do that? So we're going to look at that this morning. First, let's look at the fact this first point's on the top of your listening guide in the bulletin. Let's look at the fact that regular giving is a New Testament pattern. 1 Corinthians 16:2 says, on the first day of every week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with his income, saving it up so that when I come, no collections will have to be made. So Paul commands here, God has Paul write this command down for the Corinthians and for ourselves as well. He says that we need to make a habit of giving. He says it should be weekly. And I think that's probably more in line with their pay period. You know, every pay period you should take a slice out, set it aside, and give that to the offering of God's work. Also, it should be proportional, in keeping with his income. It should be a percentage. It should be a percentage that represents the whole of your income. Because our giving is to be a reminder. Deuteronomy 14:23 says, the purpose of tithing is to teach you to always put God first in everything. That's the way that the Living Bible puts it. Another version says that tithing, what it does is it teaches us to fear God, to revere Him. And that means that we take God seriously. And as God works in your life, as you come to Christ, you commit your life to Him, when you start writing checks and giving them to His kingdom work, that's when you know you're taking God seriously. That's when you find out that God is serious and will get involved in your finances. Like Greg was saying, you know, I couldn't afford that. I can't afford 10%. That was his attitude. And what you find out is when you come to Christ, you're making Him your Lord. You're making a choice to allow Him to be the Lord of your life. And that's what it takes to begin this pattern or habit and continue that pattern or habit. So if we weekly or every pay period we write a check and a portion of it goes to God's work, a percentage, then what that does, that represents the whole of your income, really, and the whole of your life. It's you're saying to God, you're my Lord. I've made this choice. Matthew 6:24 says, no one can serve two masters. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. And I think it's really an easy thing to know that money can master you. And it really can be a master. We can get so wrapped up in money and earning money, getting more money, because money seems to be the answer to everything, doesn't it? I mean, we get in this mode. Actually, Ecclesiastes 10:19 says that money, it says sort of in a quoting way of the way that we tend to think, money is the answer for everything. You know, and we tend to lean toward that, and we're actually nudged to believe that. We're sometimes just pushed to believe that by the billboards and commercials, and it's kind of comical, really, to look at some of the products and some of the promises that are made with the products. You know, use this deodorant, you know, and your life will come together. You know, things like that. It's really it's absurd. It's really absurd, but I laugh going down the freeway sometimes looking at the billboards thinking, really? That's going to happen? Okay. I don't think I'm going to try that. But so we're nudged and we're pushed away. Money is the answer to everything. And I know at different times in my life I've thought my marriage and our family would go a lot smoother if I could just get some more money. You know what? We wouldn't have the conflict. We wouldn't have the rub. We wouldn't have the trouble. We wouldn't have this. Money. More money would do it. Then I wouldn't have to deal with my attitudes, or I wouldn't have to deal with the struggles. I wouldn't have to, you know, work through those things. So it's very easy for money to master you, because money gives you the ability to buy the things that you think are going to get you what you want. And so we get on this track where we have to choose up front, okay, I'm either going to serve mammon, which is money, as it says in 6:24 there, Matthew 6:24, or God. It's a basic, fundamental choice that we have to make in life. And it's a choice that's included in your decision to follow Jesus Christ as Lord. You decide that He is the answer for everything, not money. He's the one. I'm following Him. And, you know, you'll notice in the bulletin we say that we don't expect guests. We don't want you to feel obligated to participate in the offering, because we really don't. This is a commitment that believers make to give God lordship over their finances and to serve Him by giving a portion of their finances to Him. And so we really don't expect guests and those who haven't yet committed their lives to Him to tithe or to give. But on the other hand, the scriptures are very clear that Christians need to think this matter through. We need to take this seriously. And then step out in faith and watch God get involved in your life through your giving and your finances. Really an amazing thing. In Nehemiah 10, Nehemiah had led the people of Israel to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem, and they were going to begin to rebuild the city and once again restore worship in the temple. And it's interesting, their reaction. One of the things that came out of their renewal, their renewed heart for God, their renewed desire to follow Him and obey Him, in Nehemiah 10 it says, we will, and the phrase is, assume responsibility for, and then it begins to list the things that have to do with God's house, His temple at the time, God's house. We are now God's house, the church is His temple. He lives in us. He lives in the church as a body in a special way, and then in each individual Christian, He lives inside of us. But when we come together, we are His temple as a body of believers. But it's interesting how Israel, the God's people at the time, they assumed responsibility for the work that went on in God's house. There were offerings and things that they'd been neglecting for decades. And they assumed responsibility for His house and for His work. And the word assume responsibility means that we're going to speak the ordinances to ourselves. We're going to tell ourselves these laws. And so they took, what they did was, they took responsibility on themselves for taking care of God's house and God's work. And it was all tied into their relationship, their desire to grow in their relationship to God and to move His work and His name forward in the world. It was all wrapped up in there, and it's interesting how that was a byproduct of their heart to follow Him. You know, Matthew 6:21 says, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Well, their heart was turned back to God, and their treasure was there as well. They began to assume responsibility themselves. So it's all wrapped up in our commitment to the Lord. It's the idea there in Nehemiah 10 is that they can't rebuild their city and expect everything to go right with their own houses and their own work if they're not paying attention to God's house and God's work. It's extreme, though, to think. Sometimes when you hear a message on giving or when you read some passages in Scripture on giving, you can go to the extreme of thinking, well, if I take, you know, if I write the check, sort of what Greg was talking about, if I write the check and put it in the offering and do my duty for God's house and God's work, then I can do what I want with my house and my work. You know, and I can expect God to take care of my house and my work. But it's a much bigger, it's a much larger issue than that. The truth is, tithing doesn't override poor stewardship. It's interesting, isn't it, as Mark and Greg shared, that they were all wrapped up. And to tithe, it represented a larger issue of financial stewardship. To be faithful in that required that they begin to be faithful in the way they handled their overall finances. And so it's extreme to think that as long as I'm writing the check, then I need to expect God to pay me back, to reimburse me, to bless me financially. Whether or not I'm stewarding my own personal finances or my own life in a way that pleases Him, it's all wrapped up. It's a piece of the pie. God uses the money that we pull together. We use the money that we pull together to help others come to Christ, to begin to follow Him, to help them grow to the point where they're a blessing to other people. And beyond that, though, there are some things that He does in us and some opportunities that we find in giving that are sort of byproducts. There are some concrete rewards that we experience as we give. I've found in my own walk with the Lord that the greater the risk in something, the greater the reward. And when you're writing the check, you know, you could probably use that money, as Mark said, to pay off some debt or to do some other things with that money. And there's a risk tied to letting it go. And I found that as in any situation, as there's a greater risk, there's always a greater reward. And God can do some deeper things in my life and in your life if we'll step out in obedience in these areas where there's risk. There are some things that solidify, some convictions that develop, some understandings of who God is and how real He is that occur only as we obey Him in this area. And so let's look at some of the rewards of giving. First of all, giving strengthens faith. Malachi 3:10-11 says, "Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, and there may be a flood." Wait. Sorry. I'm trying to find it in the Bible and read it off the sheet, and so I'll just get it in the Bible and read it from there. It says, "Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse that there may be a flood." No, that's not what it says. Just checking. "That there may be food in my house." Once again, so that you could take care of his house. "Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that you will not have room for it." You know that fleece that Greg threw out? This is an area. Now, we don't want to test God in very many areas. We really don't. But this is one where God says, check it out. Check it out. Test me in this. See if this is not true. And I will grow your faith. Faith is like a muscle. Muscles, in order to grow, they have to be exercised. And the habit of giving allows us to exercise that muscle of faith. Because every time it's a choice. It tends to be, you know, our finances are close to our heart. And every time we write the check, it tends to be a choice. And if it's just become a mundane habit for you, it needs to be seen as a choice. Where, God, I'm taking this portion of my income to honor you. And if you're growing into this tithing and giving thing, it's a way to find out that God gets involved in your life. God gets very involved in your life. As you faithfully give and steward, He pours out His blessing. It's a way to check Him out. God graciously allows us to grow into it. You know, like Greg said, came to the point where he started at 5% and 5% saving, and God did some things to grow his faith. God showed him that if he would honor him in that way, he would care for him in some ways that he didn't expect. God throws the floodgates open to those who are faithful in their giving and stewardship of their lives. He's gracious to let you grow into tithing, but also if you know better, he can spank you in this area as well. Malachi 3 says, in tithes and offerings, in verse 8, it says, "Will a man rob God? Yet you rob me." And this is God speaking. But you ask, how do we rob you? And it goes on, in tithes and offerings, "You are under a curse, the whole nation of you, because you are robbing me." He goes on saying after verse 10, "I will prevent," one of the things he'll do if you'll respond to him with the tithe, stewardship of your life and giving, "I will prevent pests from devouring your crops, and the vines of your fields will not cast their fruit, won't fall off the trees and rot. Then all the nations will call you blessed, for yours will be a delightful land." So the implication is he'll pull back the things that are chewing up your resources. He will pull back. He will protect you from those things. And so if you know better and you're not tithing, you haven't taken God seriously in this area to this point in your life, it's something to consider. It's something to think through, because God responds. Part of the things that may be going on in your life and in your circumstances may reflect how you're handling your checkbook. I know one time my car broke down, And I had been holding back. We were tight. We were in seminary. It was tight. And I thought, well, I'm just going to wait a little while and use this money and, you know, until a certain date. And God took that out of my hide. I knew better. Because the car broke down, and the exact amount that I was holding back on my tithe was the amount that it cost to fix the car. And so part of the thing that may be going on in you and in your life and things that may be happening may reflect a stubbornness to follow God in this area. It's something to check out, and it's an area that we need to take God very seriously in. He's very gracious to let you grow into tithing. He allows us to test Him in this area. But also, if you've been around a while and you know better, you can expect a spanking every once in a while financially if you're refusing to follow Him in this area. Second thing giving does is it helps keep things in perspective. As Mark said, God owns it all. Psalm 24, 1 through 2 says this: "The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. For He founded it upon the seas and established it upon the waters." God is the rightful owner of the universe and everything in that universe, including us. When you commit your life to Christ, you put Him in charge of your life. It's His rightful place. He's finally in His rightful place in your life. He will not take that place unless you give it to Him. But when you commit your life to Him and put Him in charge of your life, He's in the place that He belongs. He's the one who made you. He's the one who bought you back when you turned away from Him. One of the things that happens is when you sign your life over to Christ is this allows you to take what I call a renter's mentality toward life. Not a haphazard mentality, but a renter's mentality. When I was renting, we rented for years, many years, and when we were renting and something would go wrong with the house, I'd call the landlord. There's a lot of freedom in that. You know, the water heater breaks down, call the landlord. They tell me where to go to get a new water heater. It's great. When we purchased our home, or began paying for our home that someday we may own, figuratively, the water heater breaks down, you know what? I got to call somebody. I got to write the check. I got to pay for it. I got to get it covered. I've got to figure it out. If you step back and you understand God's perspective on things, when you sign your life over to Him and your water heater breaks down, He's promised if you're giving your life to His kingdom and His righteousness that He'll meet your needs. He has promised that He will give you what you need to cover the water heater. And so you can have a renter's mentality toward life. It's great because you know what? You're really renting anyway. You may think you own some things, but someday you're going to pass on. You're going to pass away, and that house isn't going to be yours any longer. It's going to be somebody else's, probably your children. The car that you're driving, really, you know, Enterprise, Avis, all those guys, they rent cars, but you're really sort of renting your car for a while you live here on earth. And if you'll acknowledge God's ownership of your life and the universe the way it's right to do, if you'll sign your life over to Him, you can realize, you know what? It's not just about here and now. It's not just about what's going on right here. I need to be faithful with right here. I need to be faithful with the things that God has provided me and take care of them. But ultimately, when something goes wrong, I can trust Him to provide what I need to take care of it. It's really a place of freedom. I mean, there is a lot of freedom in recognizing God's ownership, which is what we do when we steward and when we tithe. We're recognizing His ownership over the whole pie with the piece of the pie that we share with Him. And it should help us keep things in perspective. It should give us the freedom and allow us to relax. It should make it easier on us to love people and use things versus pouring a great deal of energy into preserving the things that God has provided. Third thing is, third reward, is that giving is an antidote for materialism. 1 Timothy 6:17 through 18 says, "Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth." Those who are rich, interesting phrase, that would include almost everybody in America. Most everybody in this room. I remember Nathan sharing when they came back from Kenya about standing with one of the Kenyans and kind of looking out over an area, and they were looking at a shack. I mean, that was, you know, maybe about as valuable as an outhouse or something. And the man was, you know, opening up his heart to Nathan and saying, "You know what? My goal is that someday I could own a home like that one." And Nathan was thinking, "Oh my goodness, what a different perspective." I mean, you know, wow. Okay, my definition of rich is going to change. This man wants to work his whole life so he can build a shack. So when you read a passage like 1 Timothy 6, "Command those who are rich in this present world," you know, we're going to have to include ourselves in that. We shouldn't be arrogant, nor to put our hope in wealth. And it goes on to say, which is so uncertain. Check the stock market out these days. But we're to put our hope in God, in Him, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. It's an antidote for materialism. Those who are rich, all of us, this built-in habit of tithing helps us avoid a life of selfishness and self-indulgence, which will eventually destroy us. It's interesting to know where Howard Hughes ended up, one of the wealthiest men of his time. Loved the party life, loved, you know, taking his money and just, you know, indulging himself with it. Where he ended up was in a hotel room. A man who was once a tall, strapping man, shriveled, 120 pounds, alone in a hotel room, isolated from the people around him, and popping, skin-popping heroin. He was a heroin addict who shriveled up into his own world and died in that state. Because he took his wealth and he indulged himself. He built an empire and a world in which he was the center. And he ended up in a bad sort. He destroyed himself through the self-indulgence that he was allowed to have. Giving is an antidote for materialism. And you notice in Proverbs, one of the places in Proverbs, I believe it's Proverbs 30, verses 7 and 8, the man says, "Lord, I don't want too much so that I'll forget about you, and I don't want too little so that I'll steal and dishonor your name. Don't give me too much or too little, but God, keep me where I need to be." And if we have the right understanding of Him, we can trust Him in this area, and it's an antidote for materialism. The fourth reward of giving is that it is a factor in prosperity. Proverbs 11:25 says, "A generous man will prosper. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed." Jesus points out a basic rule of thumb for life in Luke 6:38. It says, "Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured into your lap." I love that picture. "For with the measure you use, it will be measured out to you." When somebody's in need, what measure do you use in meeting that need? Do you try to go, are you extravagant in your giving? Are you extravagant in your helping? Do you try just to give them just as little as possible to meet the need, or do you just try to cut out a whole big piece of the pie and serve it to them? The measure you use will be the measure that you get. A generous man will prosper. He will make progress in his life. Now, be careful not to oversimplify this issue of giving. Sometimes TV preachers do this. Basically, they're teaching on giving, which happens consistently every program. says something like, "Give to my ministry and God will bless you for your giving." So some people, I know maybe some of you have checked that out. Okay, get out the calculator, give $10, see what happens. You know, give $20, see what comes back. Break out the calculator and it doesn't add up. Boy, this blessing thing, Jesus said, the measure you use, it'll come back pressed down, shaking over, pouring into my lap. And this promised blessing seems to be a little short here. What's the deal? Well, the truth is, we give, we're faithful stewards. In other words, we learn to manage our life and our finances in line with God's wisdom and His priorities. And when we do that, you'll be blessed and you will see progress in every way in your life. Giving is a piece of overall stewardship. It's not the whole pie. Giving is a factor in prosperity. A generous man will prosper. He'll make progress toward the goals God has for him. The fifth reward is that giving allows us to turn some temporary thing into an eternal reward. Matthew 6, 19 through 20 says, "Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moth and rust do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal." I like what Francis Schaeffer said. You can take it with you if you are a Christian. We can lay up money and land and investments, but we can lay it up just as realistically and objectively in heaven. Pattern of faithful giving helps you to wrap your heart around people and the purposes that are on the heart of God. When we pool our resources together, when we pool our money together, when we take the offering and we put things in place to do what God has assigned for us to do as a congregation, people's lives are changed for eternity. They grow better here in this life, but then after this life, they grow and on and on and on in a relationship with their God. Lives are changed for eternity. There is an eternal dimension to what we're doing that you find nowhere else. So as we do that, we wrap our heart around people and the purposes that are important to God. Verse 21 of Matthew 6 says, "For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." Supporting the work financially helps us keep our heart focused on what's important to God. And God allows it to become a blessing to ourselves as well as we faithfully follow Him in this area. Let's bow for prayer. Our Father, we thank you for your goodness to us, the way that you have allowed us to live in the country we live in and experience the measure of wealth that we do experience. Help us, God, to grow, to trust you more. Help our faith to develop and grow, and help us, Lord, to become faithful stewards of our life and finances, and help us to boldly step out and trust you in our giving and reap the reward from taking that greater risk. We ask for this in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.